Shall we begin?
Let's begin now.
Hi, I am Cynthia Cooper, named to the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame, and you're listening to Dishin' and Swishin'.
Hi, everybody. It's David Siegel welcoming you to this week's Dishin' and Swishin' podcast. And it's a pleasure to welcome to Dishin' and Swishin' a woman who has been blazing trails her entire life and continues to do so, working with the Washington Wizards now, and plus she is one of our favorite women's college basketball announcers. It's great to have Kara Lawson join the podcast. Kara, how are you today?
I'm doing great, David. It's basketball season, so this is the most wonderful time of the year. I'm pumped.
Well, you know, the schedule for the NBA is certainly a lot more taxing than that for the college season, for the women's game. But it's good to hear that you answered the question this week people have had about whether you would still be able to do games.
Oh, women's college games, yeah. I'm still going to be the same presence that I've been around the women's college game, which is exciting. It was something that was really important to me in accepting the position with the Wizards. Wanted to stay involved in women's games. And fortunately, both ESPN and NBC were able to work it out, and I can't wait. So, yeah, as far as my presence in the sport, it's not going to be any different than it's been the last 14 years. So it's my 15th year with ESPN covering the women's tournament, and I can't wait to do it again.
Well, you know, I do have one way where you guys can increase your presence in the women's game. You know, the four of you worked so well together on that broadcast. How about you all pull some money and buy a WNBA team now that there's one for sale?
I don't know. I don't know about the other three members of my crew's bank account. I can't vouch for that. Mine certainly is not large enough to pull that off. But yeah, I did read that this morning, going through my daily articles and see that the Liberty is up for sale. So it'll be interesting to see what happens and who becomes the new ownership group.
You know, I think that it could work out well if they can find somebody similar to what Magic Johnson did in L.A., showing that, you know, there was interest in caring about the team. I mean, you know, New York is such a hotbed for sports. I think that with the right owner, the team should still thrive.
Yeah, great fans, great basketball fans in New York. Great amount of talent that comes out of New York on the women's side. Yeah, for sure, to have a team in where the NBA and WNBA are headquartered, I think is a real important important piece for the WNBA.
Well, let's move on to some nicer topics to cover, some good things, and let's talk about the start of the women's college basketball season. And right off the bat, I thought this tournament in Ohio, the start of the season at Nationwide Arena, preview of the Final Four location, was a phenomenal idea to begin with. And then, in particular, the last game between Louisville and Ohio State was certainly all that fans could want to see. How was it to call that game?
Yeah, it was a great game. It was just had everything you would want, I think, in sitting down to, you know, on a Sunday afternoon to watch basketball. It was up and down. There was a high degree of shot making on both sides. Obviously, the game was competitive. It went into overtime. So, you know, 1-2 possession game down the stretch. I mean, it really had everything. And then you had two of the best guards in the country on either side. While they weren't really going head-to-head in terms of guarding one another, they certainly were going head-to-head in terms of matching each other's shots, particularly in the second half. And I thought it was a great showcase, a great way for us as ESPN to kick off the season. And just had a blast being there and seeing four of the teams that, you know, we'll hear from in March. All four of those teams, I believe, have the ability to make the Final Four, to be back in Columbus. You know, we'll have to see how the season plays out, but I think all four have that chance.
Yeah, I like the way that you guys talked about Stanford and the ability for growth on that team, because, you know, if anybody thinks that this Stanford team is going to play like they did this week in March, you know, they don't know Tara very well, because this is a team that is going to look totally different by the time the end of the season rolls around.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, experienced fans of the sport know how much time and effort that Tara puts into her program, and also how wonderful a coach that she is. How she's able to prepare her players and her team, and they always experience tremendous growth over the course of the season. This will be a great learning experience for her group to go 0-2 to kick off the year, because remember Stanford played Ohio State there on Friday before that Sunday doubleheader, and she has a lot of young players. She's changed her offense. There's a lot of good-looking pieces. I thought Carrington displayed some nice play there in the second half against Connecticut. And their young players are only going to get better and better. I had a chance to watch them practice a couple weeks ago out there in Palo Alto, and you can see the seeds of a really good team. It's just going to be a matter of how quickly does that group mature.
You know, the Pac-12 in its entirety is looking different this year. You know, the Oregon Ducks are looking phenomenal. They are certainly off to a great start. And UCLA is extremely strong, too. So, you know, there is going to be no easy games in the Pac-12 again this year, although Washington will drop off, obviously, after losing as much as they did. You pointed out one of the great stories, one of the great players coming in this year during the games this weekend, and that is at Oregon. And in addition to Inesco, then you bring in Sabali, and this is an amazing possible combination, along with Ruthie Hebert.
Yeah, Oregon's legit, and yeah, I had a chance to see Sabrina and Ruthie this summer, being a part of USA Basketball, and those two continue to grow and get better and better. It's hard to believe they were just freshmen last season when they made that run to the Elite Eight. And then Satu Sabali, she's a German freshman that is – she's not their best player yet. I would still say Sabrina's their best player, but she'll be their best player pretty soon. I mean, she's really, really good, and she gives them an element of athleticism and versatility on both ends of the floor, especially defensively. I think fans are going to really, really like her game, and she's going to be a pro. She's going to play the game for a long time. So Oregon and getting her, I think, really changes their dynamic, and you know, makes them a team that could get to a Final Four this season if they continue to grow and improve. And I think it sets them up for the next 2 years after this to be legitimate championship contenders.
You know, it's only two games, such a small sample size, but I kind of like 15.5 points in 17.5 minutes. You know, that's pretty efficient, and that's what she's done in those games.
Right, and it's just a matter of her getting used to the physicality of the game, the rules of the game, because they're different, right? International players come over here, and they've played one way, the international rules, their whole life. And so it is an adjustment. I'm telling you, she's a star. She's going to get better and better and better and better, and it's just going to be a lot of fun to watch.
You know, they came out today with the watch list for the Wooden Award, and this is the first of the awards that actually has four UConn players on it, as Ezra Stevens was added in addition to the big three of Williams, Samuelson, and Collier. Stevens is going to take a little while to get acclimated, I think, to what Geno wants her to do during games. But she is clearly one of the most talented players in the country. And, you know, this UConn is going to be, barring injury, of course, he's one of the toughest teams that I've ever seen in a college game.
They were very impressive on Sunday. And, you know, much like we were talking about with Tara and what she's able to do at Stanford, UConn is a team that consistently improves through the course of the season. The way that Azaray looked, you can see that there's more that, she can give, and there's more of the game that she can impact, and I think that will come with her comfort level increasing with what they're doing and with what Geno is asking her to do. So Dangerfield obviously looked terrific, and that is a position that was inconsistent for them a season ago, and now all of a sudden you have a point guard with all of these options and all of these weapons, and it's scary. It's scary to think how good that UConn is going to be by the NCAA tournament. It's going to be a lot of fun watching them grow.
That had to kill other coaches. You know about those four, and then Dangerfield starts nailing three-pointers right and left and leads the team in scoring in her first game starting.
Yeah, I mean, from a scheme perspective, David, like what you try and do is you say, okay, where are the weak spots on the floor? Who can we afford to leave or afford to give up something to? And then that allows us to be stronger in some other area or stronger in another matchup because we can devote, more people to that. And you don't have that option against UConn. And so what that forces you to do is play them, player for player. And that's not a good recipe for success because they're all very talented and can exploit matchups. I don't really know, if there's a defense that can solve this year's version of the Connecticut Huskies because they've really got all their bases covered at each position. And then, you add Azaray into that mix with her size, with her shooting, and it's just tough. And we haven't even mentioned Megan Walker, who, as a freshman, you would think would continue to get better as the season goes along and be, a second viable bench option for Gina.
Well, I think the Minnesota Lynx might have a shot at stopping them because they have Sill, but that's about it.
Yeah, I put my money on the Lynx in that one.
Although I found it interesting that Stevens took number 23. I wonder if she asked Maya for it, like Tiffany Hayes had to ask Diana.
Yeah, I don't know. But she does Megan Walker have number?
I think Walker has three, doesn't she?
Walker has three, yeah. So
they all fall by the wayside eventually. We all get old. So the next group behind Connecticut, you've got Texas, Baylor, South Carolina, Louisville, Notre Dame, Mississippi State, that whole group. Rather than go through every team here and take forever, talk for a second, if you would, about what you like about some of these other teams and who you think could make a lot of noise this year amongst that group.
Notre Dame, I'm intrigued to watch. I haven't seen them yet. Obviously, with Jess Shepherd being eligible, that gives them a really good scorer in the post. Arike is somebody that's one of the best ISO players in the entire country. And so they have, and also, Lili Thompson gives them experience as well. So they're an experienced team, so I'm anxious to see them play in person. Texas, I think, with their backcourt, with Brooke McCarty, with Ariel Atkins, with Shub Sutton, they've got a lot of talent. Obviously, not having Joyner Holmes here at the beginning of the season will change them a little bit because she's such a force for them with her athleticism and her rebounding ability. So they will only get stronger when she returns. So they're a team I like a lot. And you talked about Asia Wilson and not really having anybody to guard her in the country, how it's difficult. That's exactly what Baylor has with Kalani Brown. I mean, there's not really somebody that can just say, hey, you go take care of her. I mean, she's a load, and she gives them just a great deal of consistency and a presence in the paint. So I'm excited about this year. I think it's going to be fun. In this early stage of the season, for me as an analyst, you're really just trying to get eyes on as many teams as you can. Get a feel for what they look like, what they're running, what the new players and new freshmen look like. It's not as much hardcore evaluation as it is just, hey, let's see how everybody looks. They're typically in women's college basketball tends to be terrific non-conference matchups where top teams are going against one another like we had this past weekend. So those are obviously must-sees. But, you know, it's really after the first year when you get into conference play that teams really begin to mold into what they're going to be come tournament time.
You know, it seems this year more teams have signed on for better opponents than in prior years. I mean, in particular, you know, Baylor has always been known for playing one of the weakest out of conference schedules, and they've got a couple of top matchups this year, too. And, you know, it just seems that you're right. It's going to be interesting to watch all these early matchups, but that will just be the precursor for regular conference play. Hey, last team I want to ask you about. Tell me about your Lady Vols. I think that this is a team that people – after the last couple of years may not be expecting as much as they should be, because I think this is a potentially very strong team.
Well, their two centerpieces are really what give Tennessee the ability to play well against anybody. When you talk about Mercedes Russell and the experience she brings, and then also Jamie Nard, those two had fantastic summers, really, really composed and mature players. And difficult matchups with Mercedes' size and ability to score. She can also, you know, knock down the mid-range shot. Jamie Nard's continued to grow, really knocking down the three-point shot well, with the ability to take people off the dribble. They just have a different presence about them. But the rest of the roster, for the most part, is really young. And so it is hard to predict, you know, how quickly those young players will come around, even though they're very, very talented. It's just hard to predict, their track. I look at them in a similar vein as we talked about with Stanford, having so many young players, and what that means is to be a totally different team that you'll see come the end of the year. So those are, I think they're going to challenge for the SEC title. Along with South Carolina, along with Mississippi State, I think they'll be right there to vie with the best teams in that conference. And by the end of the year, if their freshmen progress, they could definitely be a team. I could see them being a team that's a Final Four contender.
And the last thing I wanted to ask you about before I let you go is, how much fun was it this summer to be going around with the 3-on-3 team? And being I know, don't call you coach. How about mentor for those kids?
Yeah. Yeah, well, no, I just didn't want them to call me coach. I just think that was just not something. I don't even think I would have answered, you know, if they yelled, hey, you know, coach. I think I would have thought there was an actual coach in the gym instead of me. For me, it was just really fun to be around four highly motivated kids that want to grow, that want to improve, that want to get better, and just we're focused on winning a gold medal. And you see that, you see the intensity, and you see the desire, and you just want to do everything that you can to help put them in a position to be successful. And they played really, really well. 3-on-3 for those listeners that aren't that in tune with it is very difficult because there's way less margin for error than 5-on-5. So, and we've been fortunate with USA Basketball in 5-on-5 to dominate on the women's side. And it looks easy and it seems easy. And the spreads for games are enormous. And so when you're part of USA Basketball, the expectation is to win a gold, and everyone thinks that we kind of just outrun our competition. And that's true a lot. But in 3-on-3, we being USA Basketball, haven't won this tournament since 2013. There's just less margin for error because the games are only 10 minutes long. So think about that. Even a team as great as UConn, if the game was only 10 minutes long, they would lose some games. Right? Because you just have to be good for 10 minutes. You don't have to do it for 40. And so when there's a talent differential or an effort differential, or a coaching differential or whatever it is that makes a team better than another team, that a lot of times can rise to the top in a 40-minute game because you have time for those things to rear their heads. Well, now in 3-on-3, you don't have that time. And if somebody just starts to go off shooting a three, like, you can lose very easily. That does not make for low blood pressure for me during the games because, you know, of all the things that could go wrong. And it's very nerve-wracking, very, very nerve-wracking. And it's just I was just thrilled for the players to be able to win and get that opportunity.
Yeah, the depth is the biggest, that I said, in addition to the time. That's the other thing. When you only have four players going instead of, you know, going 10 deep, where if one person's off, you can bring somebody else in, you know, then you're absolutely right. It's very difficult. I love the game. I've been watching it every year that it, when the championships are on, and I think it's great, a great fun to see. So,
yeah, no, it's a fun game. It's a great, it teaches the players how to play without being overmanaged and overcoached, because they have to make decisions for themselves. And so you teach them concepts and plays, but then they have to make those decisions on the court. And so a lot of what we did was we talked strategy, you know, at meals and at dinners and say, you know, what would you do here? Or what would, you know, if we were down 2 points and, you know, this was going on, just to get their minds thinking about those types of decisions. About how they would scheme and strategize, because ultimately that's what you want to do, right? You want someone to be able to function without you. And the only way to do that is to put them in positions where they have to do it on their own, and repetition can help any player achieve that. So I had four very intelligent players. And so what I was able to challenge them with and the concepts I was able to help them learn were really out distanced my expectations going in, and that was just based off of how quickly they were able to pick things up. I wasn't sure, and I would just throw stuff at them, and they would pick it up, and it was impressive.
Well, Kara, I know you're trying to get off to, what is it, 5 games in 8 days for the Wizards?
Yeah. Welcome to Tuesday in the NBA.
Well, that's,
it's games all the time. It's fun though. I mean that's the player's most important, or I should say most exciting part to the game is playing games. And so we've got a busy week coming up, but it should be a lot of fun.
Well, that sounds it. Well, congratulations on doing that job. And we love seeing you on the women's game, so I'm glad to hear that you're going to be around as often as ever. And thank you very much for taking time to be with us today. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
All right. Thanks so much, David.